life is too short to follow some ridiculous set of rules that says your career has to look like X.
You've got the concept and you've got the passion, but where do you go from here? Womenpreneur Strategies for Success is here to help you learn the exact tools, mindset shifts, and proven growth strategies to build the business you want while still having a life. You've got the will. Let us help you find the way. With your host, successful entrepreneur, Smita Singh.
Hello and welcome to this brand spanking new episode in 2016. Happy, happy, happy new year, guys. I hope your holidays were amazing, filled with a lot of fun, laughter, and a ton of family. And I hope you ate a lot, because I sure did. Are you ready to take on the world? Guys, it is the new year, and this is really a magical time. These first few weeks of the month, they just give you such an intrinsic motivation to do things. It sure does to me, and I really get a lot done. So I hope you listened to my earlier episode about realistic goal setting, and I go through the entire process of what's working for me, and how I use the 12-week year to really amp up my short-term goals to achieve my long-term goals. If you haven't heard that one yet, do go back and hear it. And I think it'll really help you a lot by really, you know, chunking down that time and focusing in on the 12-week year. Also, I want to thank you so much for listening to the podcast and being such an amazing and supportive patron. I'm so, so truly grateful to all of you and would really like to hear from you. So please do send in your emails, messages, or use the record button on the website to record a short message for me. And if you have any questions about marketing, branding, or PR, feel free to ask me and I will make sure that I answer them. Now, before I introduce to you our guest today, I do want to remind you to subscribe to the show. That ensures that the new episodes are coming directly to your device without you having to look for them. And trust me, you would want to do that because I really have some goodies in store for you that most certainly will help you in your entrepreneurial journey. So our guest today is the amazing Tess Vigeland. Tess is a veteran journalist and a well-known voice to millions of American radio listeners. She is the CEO of Tess Vigeland Productions, a Los Angeles-based multimedia company. And her first book, Leap, Leaving a Job with No Plan B to Find the Career and Life You Really Want, is amazing, by the way. It was published in August 2015. And I really had so much fun talking to Tess. And there are a ton of really golden nuggets in this conversation. So be sure to listen on till the end. And actually today, Tess is off on an adventure of indeterminate length. She has taken the leap and is in Southeast Asia at the moment. And she doesn't know when she's coming back. Yes, you heard that right. I'm really totally having a blast following her travels. Be sure to link up with her on social media. The links will be in the show notes. And you certainly will find her journey fascinating. In fact, I think I'm living a bit vicariously through her travels. So be sure to link up with her. And without further ado, let's get this show started now, shall we?
Guys, I did want to warn you, when we recorded this interview with Tess, it seemed like the audio was perfect, but for some reason afterwards, there was some kind of a lag between my voice and Tess's voice, and my editor tried to do whatever she could to fix it. But there are times when it seems like I am talking over Tess and I'm kind of reacting to her, to whatever she's saying before she actually says it. So just a quick warning, I am not actually doing that. I did not actually do that in the interview. For some reason, because of the lag, it seems like I'm talking way ahead of when I actually did. So you will hear me kind of reacting or laughing before Tess says something, or I'm talking over her, but they're not everywhere, just in a few places. So just hang with me here. I think the audio, the interview is too amazing to to let go, and I just wanted to keep it as it is. So you can see all of it, you know, the real raw version of it. All right, we'll get right into it with Tess, and I'm telling you, this is going to be an amazing conversation.
Hi, Tess. I am excited. I have listened to you on Marketplace and PR, and I am super excited to just hear you just for myself right now before it goes out into the whole wide world. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Like I said, it's my pleasure. And, you know, interviews are my favorite thing in the world. So
right.
Now I'm just on the other
That's
end
fun.
Of them these days.
I'm sure you've heard this 110 times, but have you ever heard people say, oh my gosh, I feel like I know you, Tess. I've heard you. And you're like, you know, I listen to you every day.
Yes. In fact, really? That happened just last night. I was giving a speech. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina right now. And someone came up to me at the end and said, you know, I feel like you're one of my best friends. And, you know, people all over public radio get that. Mm-hmm. If you've been on the air long enough, people have heard you for years and, you know, they feel like they get to know you. And I think there's something about, I'm sure somebody has done some studies on this. I think there's something about hearing someone, even versus seeing them, say on TV, there's something about just listening to someone that is very intimate. And so people absolutely feel like they get to know you, and especially in what I was doing. I mean, I hosted a call-in show, so, you know, I would tell people my own stories. So I think that has added a little bit to people thinking that they know
right.
me, and they know
Absolutely.
Me a little
and, you
bit.
You know, you're so right, because even since I've started this podcast, it's only been a few months, and I've had people, you know, from the weirdest of places that I would have never thought.
Yeah.
And they write to me and they reach out to me and they're like, oh my gosh, the story that you talked about, we loved it. And that's, you know, that's what we identify with. And I'm like, sometimes it feels so amazing. And sometimes it feels like, oh my gosh, yeah, this like totally
Freaky.
Random person knows the most yep. intimate detail of what I did when I was, you know, 18.
Right.
Okay.
Right. No, I know the feeling, but you know, for the most part, it's
yes.
for the most part, it's lovely. And I love being able to establish a relationship with listeners. I mean, that was another one of my favorite parts of the job. So it's one of the best things I can hear from anyone, that they feel like they know me and they feel like
yes,
I'm a friend.
Absolutely. I know you have a new book out and I would love to talk about that. But before that, I do, since you've been on radio so long and I'm a podcaster, I have to ask you this. So, you know, how and you had just mentioned about the relationships with your listeners. How does one, you know, go about building that relationship with a complete stranger?
Wow, that's a great question, especially a stranger
right.
that you can't see and actually who you can't even hear back or for the most part talk to. Although again, you know, I had part of the show that I did was a call-in show. So I think that added to listeners feeling like they had a relationship with me because I was talking with a lot of them, you know, while I was on the show. But, you know, I really think it's all about being human. It's all about being vulnerable. I mean, I was perfectly fine telling listeners that I had made a lot of really dumb money mistakes. And I think some people, when they get into the position that I was in, which is you're hosting a show, you are, you know, purportedly the expert in your subject matter. And so you come at it as an expert. And I didn't do that. I actually was very frank with people about my money failings, my crazy money psychology. And that was something that people could relate to because they had the same issues. You know, money is just, it's hard. It is a really, there are hard concepts to grasp. It's something that we don't like to talk about. You know, I have often said that people will talk mm-hmm. about sex before they'll talk about money. That's mm-hmm. what a taboo subject it is. So the fact that I was willing to talk about it, to reveal my own weaknesses, my own failures, I think that's what people want to hear. People just as a general rule, no matter whether you're talking about money or whatever, they want to hear that other people are going through the hard stuff that they're going through. They want to know that they're not crazy. They want to know that they are not the only one making mistakes out there. And so I think people like you, people like me, people in positions to, you know, have some sort of authority, have some sort of, have a microphone, have, you know, something, a place to stand and talk. It's our responsibility to really relate to people on a very human level versus a kind of expert voice of God level. I don't know. I think that's part of why there is a relationship there. It's just, you know, I'm as flawed as everybody else.
You make a very good point about being authentic, right? If you are,
yes,
yeah, if you're that's your own self, you know, probably, and some people might like it and some people might not. So I guess,
oh, plenty of people don't.
Right. And how do you deal with that?
That was the hardest part of the job, you know, and it's happening with the book too. You know, authors, people have no compunction telling authors what they do not like about their books. I got used to it in radio just because I was on radio for so long, and I got to understand that, you know, some people didn't like my style. Some people didn't like what we were saying on the show. There were people who didn't like my voice, even though that's how I make a living. And you just learn that, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and they have a lot of places to express it these days. And I tell myself that, you know, those kinds of negative feedback loops are much more about them than they are about me. And that's easier said than done to tell yourself that, but that's what I try to do. That's what I challenge myself to do. And, you know, my objective on radio, my objective in the book is to help whoever I can with, you know, whatever experience I went through. And if I do that even for one person, then I've done my job. And I can't worry about kind of all the rest of the folks who either wanted me to write a different book, or they wanted the show to say something different about money, or whatever it is. You know, I do what I do, and that's all I can do.
So let's talk about the book. Tell us, you know, what made you write the book? And I know I want to hear a little bit about the story of really what happened.
Okay. So I was in public radio for a little over 20 years, and I had my dream job from the moment I got out of college. I was unbelievably fortunate. I found the thing that I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And I ended up at Marketplace, which is a business and finance program that's heard on public radio stations nationwide. And that was where I wanted to be from the time I started in radio. I loved the show. I loved how it was able to take a subject that most people find kind of boring, business and economics, and make it interesting and make it listenable. And so I ended up getting an anchor gig there when I was 32 years old. So I pretty much got to the top of my career ladder when I was very young. And I stayed there for 11 years, and 6 of those years were in personal finance, where, as I said, you know, we took calls from people and we talked about the more micro aspects of, you know, your checking account, your 401k, your college savings account, all that sort of thing. And I was also there during the financial crisis. So much of our time was spent trying to talk people down, trying to tell them that, yes, we will get through this. It's horrifying right now, but it is a blip on the historical radar, which in fact it was. So I did that I was at Marketplace for 11 years. And then in 2012, for all kinds of circumstances, I decided that I really wanted to see if there was something else out there for me. I had been doing the same thing for more than 2 decades. And there were other factors that I don't really go into publicly that had to do with my workplace. And I decided that I didn't want to try to find another job while I was already in one. Because if you're trying to figure out who you want to be next, how you're going to reinvent yourself, how you're going to perhaps live the next act of your life, that's really hard to do if you don't have some time and space to do that. And you don't have time and space to do that if you're already in a job. So I left and I gave them 3 months' notice, and then I had no idea what I was going to do.
Going completely against the norm.
Oh, yes.
You know, one of the things that I hear from a lot of people, of course, that are getting into the entrepreneurship world is spend some time while you're in your full-time job, you know, moonlight, figure out what you really want to do before you take that leap. And you completely went against the grain. How was it? I mean, was it intrinsically, were you scared? Were you, you know, were you like, okay, I'm going to quit, but I have no clue what I'm doing. And what if I never find out?
All of the above.
Yeah.
Yes. And I mean, I of all people, having hosted a personal finance show, if anyone had called in to me and said, I'm going to do this, right. I would have said, you're crazy. No, that's against the rules, as you said. But what I've learned since then, first of all, what I've learned is it's a much harder thing to do than anyone tells you. You know, there's a lot of gurus out there, career gurus, who will say, you know, follow your passion and everything will work out for you because you love what you're doing. No, it is much harder than that. It is a massive roller coaster of highs and lows. And my argument now is that you need to prepare yourself for that. You need to prepare yourself emotionally. You need to prepare yourself certainly financially. That is key. You have to prepare yourself psychologically to take a leap like this. But if you do those things, then, you know, as I was saying earlier, you have the headspace to really sit down and take some time to figure out what that next move is. I think it's absurd the way we do it now, which is you have your old job until Friday, and then you start your new job on Monday. That allows no time to A, decompress, and B, think about what's coming next. And, you know, the argument that you always hear is, well, that's stupid financially, and it's going to hurt your career if you take some time off. So A, financially, I am not saying that you do this without being prepared financially. You have to set up, you have to know how you're going to pay the bills. Absolutely no question. Now, whether your comfort level is 2 weeks of savings, 3 months of savings, 2 years of savings, you have to figure that out for yourself. But you absolutely need to know that either you can go back to the job that you used to have in some way, shape, or form, or that you can take the skills that you developed over a career and turn that into something that at least gets you an irregular paycheck. So you must absolutely plan for that. And, you know, some people will just say, I can't do that, you know, no way. And, you know, if you are living paycheck to paycheck, you can't do this. And I would never encourage anyone to try. That said, when you do take this time away from having a workaday schedule, it really gives you, as I said, the headspace to figure out what your priorities are, to figure out how you can take the skills that you have and translate them into something new. Or, you know, you have to also think about, are you willing to step down a few rungs on your career ladder? Would that be okay with you? Would it be okay with you to start on an entirely new career ladder where you're probably going to start a little lower than where you were just by the nature of it? But will it provide you more satisfaction? Will it be something that you look forward to on Sunday night before you go in on Monday morning? Those kinds of things should be far more important to us than they are right now. And it's because we're always told that your career has to have this linear trajectory. If you start out in math in college, then you should be doing that for the next 30 years. My argument is no. Life is too short to follow some ridiculous set of rules that says your career has to look like X. One of the people I interviewed for the book said, my career looks like an Etch-a-Sketch. And I love that, you know, make a pretty picture, you know, that has some curly cues in it. And then when you're done with that, erase it. And you've learned a lot of things as you've been doing that, but then go try something new. Why not? Who says that that's a bad idea? We need a new definition of what a successful career looks like.
Yeah, I completely, completely agree with that. So when you took that time off, what did you do? How did you decide which path to go on?
I knew that I could take the skills I had as a journalist and at the very least freelance. And that's what I did for the first several months. And then I gave a speech about that process of the first few months of my leap. And unbeknownst to me, there was an executive editor from Random House in the audience. And 11 days later, I had a book deal. So my next thing then was to become an author and to write a book. And that kept me busy. But I've been keeping my hands in journalism as well. I write for the New York Times. I write for The Guardian. I still host on the radio every once in a while. So I have irregular income. But it's been enough that, I mean, I make far less than what I used to. And I was the primary breadwinner in my house. But we've changed our lifestyle. You know, we have downsized our lifestyle. And it was worth it for me to be able to take this leap. The other thing that I do want to mention is one of the things that I learned out of all this was that we all have skills, especially if you've gotten to a certain point in your career and you've been doing something for a long time. We get to the point where we don't even recognize the skills we have because they are in our DNA. They're the things that you say, oh, I could do that in my sleep at my job. Well, maybe you could, but the fact is that a lot of people couldn't. So it's a skill that you're not even aware that you can take somewhere else. For me, it was public speaking. I had been doing that for 20 years. I have no problem getting up on stage. I have no problem with microphones. I love interviewing people. So I didn't really think of it as a skill. Well, then someone asked me to MC a day at Chicago Ideas Week where I would, you know, I keynoted and then I introduced all the rest of the speakers for the day and I did a couple of interviews on stage. And that has turned out to be one of my new things that I do in my career. And I never would have thought that that's something that I could make money with. So I encourage people to, while they're in their job that they're in, really start thinking about some of those things that you do that you don't even think about as translatable skills. Because
yes,
they probably
and that's
are.
That's so true, because exactly what you said, you know, I have had people that have said, oh, you know, you've done this and can you tell us how to do it? And I'm like, wait. Like, don't you know how to do it? Doesn't everybody know how to do this? And it's
exactly.
It's quite eye-opening, I think, because now you can look at every little thing and you can actually say, I can do this because there are so many others that can't.
Exactly. And I really think the key is, and I wish I had thought of it kind of, you know, before I took my leap, the key is to start thinking about that before you do it so that you have some idea of how you might want to translate some of those skills either into, you know, something related to what you do or into something entirely different. And, you know, it's a good exercise to go through, even if you are still loving your job and you don't think you ever want to leave it. There is no job that is 100% secure. I think we all learned that in 2008. You know, you may still love your job and think, oh, I'm never just going to up and quit it and take this leap. But what if it's forced on you? Well, then if you've already gone through this process of thinking about your skills, thinking about how you might translate them, you're going to be way ahead of the game if the worst case scenario comes to pass.
Tess, tell me, what advice would you give to a person who is ready to take the leap, but and has no clue what they want to do? So they, you know, they want to take that space, they want to think about it. And, you know, very realistically speaking, it takes time to whatever you're doing, whatever you decide to do next. It takes time to establish yourself in the new position. It takes time to, you know, build a following, do all of that stuff. You know, how would you emotionally, you know, give advice to a person to say, okay, hang on and, you know, hang in there. It's going to happen. Because it's so true. And even, you know, personally for me, I went from a small business owner, you know, to having a place and I would go and I had employees I could delegate to now where I'm like, okay, I got to do this myself. All right.
Right.
Or something a completely different new platform. And sometimes I feel it too, where I'm like, okay, it's going to get better. Maybe today was a low and tomorrow is going to get back to a high, but you just got to show up and keep doing it. And what advice would you give them?
Yeah. Show up and keep doing it. I mean, really, you have just basically laid out exactly what I would tell anyone. And I guess what I really want this book to do is to tell people that there is a process, that it is a lot about emotion. It's a lot about figuring out who you are outside of what you do. It's about trying to establish for yourself some sort of identity that isn't what you were before. Like I, you know, for so many years, I was Marketplace's Tess Vigeland. And that was so cool. And people thought I had the best job and people would recognize my voice in elevators. And then all of a sudden, I was just Tess Vigeland. And that's a real adjustment. You know, for you, you were the boss at this small business and then you didn't have that. And it's a very emotionally traumatic thing to go through. But the fact is that that's just part of the process. It's almost like the grieving process. And there are steps to it that I found out after interviewing about 80 other people who had left their jobs without knowing what they wanted to do next. And so, you know, I think when, if you are preparing to do something like this, the best thing is to just be aware and prepared for the fact that it will be a roller coaster for you. And that is completely normal. It is absolutely part of the process. And you also need to trust that you will be able to figure it out. I think a lot of people were hoping that I would write a how-to book, right? Like how to quit your job in 10 steps and have a happier life. And I didn't do that. You know, this story, this book is all about people's stories. And I think, you know, the reason I wanted to do that is because I think people have to go through it on their own time and in their own way. But what you can do is know kind of where your emotions are going to be at certain steps along the process. And again, I have to reiterate, you've got to be financially prepared. If you are financially prepared, quite frankly, that will make it 1 million times easier to do that, because the money worries are always first and foremost in front of your mind. If you are not prepared, you start worrying about where the next paycheck is going to come from. Most of the people I talk to, you know, as soon as they started worrying about where the next paycheck was going to come from, you know, and within a couple of weeks, they had a new project. Quite a few people that I talked to actually ended up making more money than they did in their previous jobs. There are a lot of success stories. Sure, sometimes it hasn't worked out for people, but you have to know that you have skills, you can fall back on them, and you can always go back to what you were good at. You know, that's, you can always go back. And as long as you have the confidence in yourself that you can do that, you're going to be fine.
When you took that leap, did you know that you were going to go through that roller coaster?
No. You know, people kept telling me, first of all, oh, you'll get another job right away. People will snap you up. And, you know, I had some interviews, but they were either in cities I didn't want to live in, or they weren't quite the right job for me. And I still wasn't sure even if I wanted to stay in journalism. So I had to go through that roller coaster, and it was awful. It was really, really awful. There is no fun in emotional lows at all. But again, I think I'm stronger having gone through it. And again, the roller coaster is something that anyone who has done this is very familiar with, in part because you're not used to project work. You're not used to not having a steady paycheck. And so you start to like devalue yourself based on what your career used to look like. Once you start realizing that A, you are not your job, and B, you have all kinds of translatable skills and you will find your way through it, then it becomes, you know, it's still a roller coaster, quite frankly, but it has smoothed out a little bit. And quite frankly, you know, I would much rather be on a roller coaster than on a merry-go-round.
Absolutely.
You know, it's an adventure. It is an adventure. And, you know, most people take a leap like this because they are not satisfied in the jobs that they're in. Perhaps they're underappreciated. They are undervalued by the people they work for. And I just have come to believe that life is far too short to live with that. You are worth more. You are worth more. And you have to believe that because of that, you will get through this kind of career transition.
Absolutely. What would you suggest to people to do when they are ready to take the leap to figure out, outside of knowing what their skills are and going deep into it, you know, how do they figure out where they should land?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think the key is to first figure out what you loved about your old job, about your old career. And write those down. Write down the things that really turned you on about going into work every day. And then write down another list of things that were not working for you. Was it the workplace? Was it what you were actually doing on a minute-to-minute basis? Was it your colleagues that you either loved or didn't? Was it the commute? Was it where you live? You know, all those sorts of things. Start to write down what was important to you, what you loved about what you were doing, and the opposite of that. So that gives you a sense of whether you want to stay in the career that you've had, right? So if you have been an accountant for 20 years, did you really love the work? In which case, do you maybe need to just go to a different workplace, or do you need to take those skills and keep using those in some other way? Or are you really tired of what you're doing? Like, you're an accountant and you cannot imagine sitting, you know, at your desk doing accounting every day anymore. That brings you no measure of joy in your life. But maybe there's something else that you've had your eye on. You don't necessarily know that that's what you want to go to, but maybe you want to go be a master gardener. That's something that I toyed with, quite frankly, which always surprises people, but I love gardening. So then, you know, the advice that you, I think, will generally hear from career counselors and the like is, as you said, actually a little bit earlier, to start dabbling in that while you are in the job that you're in. I just think that that's unrealistic. I think that most of us have work lives that are so busy and family lives that are even busier, that the idea of going and networking while you're in a job is just beyond any comprehension. So that's why when you take the leap, it gives you some room to do some exploration. And what I'm not talking about here is, you know, that kind of networking idea that we all hear, oh, go to coffee with somebody. I really recommend that you find someone in that job and ask them if you can come spend a day or two watching what they do and maybe going out to beers with them and a bunch of their colleagues, see what kind of people they are. It's hard to do because you think that you're imposing on people. But, you know, honestly, if someone had asked me to come and spend a day with me at the radio station, I would have been happy to do that. And I think most of us are. It's just so hard to ask. But if you do that, then it gives you a much better sense of what the daily life is like in that profession. And then you can start to make decisions about, you know, do you like the hours? Is that a lifestyle that you would appreciate? You know, if you think you want to be a master gardener, are you sure you don't have allergies? You know, are you sure you want to get your hands really dirty all day long? So you start to get a sense of the reality of what you're maybe looking to jump into. And, you know, again, it's just a matter of not being shy, because I think most people, especially if they like their jobs, they're more than happy to share what that's like. Now, if you want to go into the CIA, I'm sorry. There's no way that they're going to let you just come and spend a day there. So, you know, you have to be realistic about some of those things. But, and, you know, you probably can't spend time with an airline pilot in the cockpit. But, you know, there are other ways to explore the realities of something that you think you might want to go into. And if, you know, if you want to be an entrepreneur, which I thought I might want to, and then I don't want to run a business. So, you know, I'm a freelancer, but I don't have any employees or anything like that. But if that's something you want to do, go spend a day with or two or a week with someone who has done that, someone who left their job and opened something brand new. That will give you some sense of what it's really like on a day-to-day basis.
That's really good advice. And yes, and I definitely would recommend everybody to go out and read your book. I think they need it. Awesome.
Good. Yes. Good.
So Tess, what would you say is your success factor?
Success factor. You know, it's different now over the last 3 years since my leap. I think that my biggest success factor is that I have learned how to say yes to things I really want to do and things that may be risky that I've never done before. And I know how to say no. I know how to say no to something that just doesn't strike me as something I want to do. You know, I said no to a few jobs that were in places I didn't want to live. And I had the confidence in myself to know that something else would come along. It's saying no is so, so hard. It's one of the hardest things that we have to do. But my biggest success factor is I have learned the best way to say yes, and I have learned how to say no when it's not something that's good for me.
Awesome. And are you ready now for a lightning round?
I don't know. Let's see.
So Tess, what trophy would you want on your mantle?
Trophy would I want on my mantle? I'd want a Peabody. Yeah, that's the Pulitzer of broadcast.
And what is your guilty pleasure?
Oh, my guilty pleasure is cheese.
Good. Well, at least it's healthy.
I would not eat really. Cheese like, well, no, it's not. It's got like tons of fat, but I would like eat cheese every day if I could.
And what is your favorite cheese?
I love Stilton.
Awesome. And
some people can't handle the Stilton, you know, it's a really strong blue, but I'm going to have it with a glass of port.
And what are you currently reading?
I am just about to finish Modern Love Aziz Ansari, comedian, and it's really great. I have very much enjoyed it. I loved his stand-up that he did most recently, and this kind of came out of that. And then next up is a book called Pleasantville by actually a friend of mine, Attica Locke. So that's a novel that I'm going to start on as soon as I finish the last few pages of Aziz's piece.
What is your one productivity hack?
One productivity hack. You know, my productivity hack is that I had to learn that I actually don't work well first thing in the morning. And a lot of people will tell you, you know, you always see those articles about how the most productive people, the most famous people, the richest people, you know, they get all their work done at 4 in the morning. So you will too. My productivity hack is try different hours of the day and see what's best for you and don't give a hoot.
Right.
What is the best for anybody else? Work when it's best for you and take the time to figure out when that is.
That's interesting. And what is your personal motto?
Oh, I guess I need to develop one. I guess my personal motto is to sew your parachute on the way down.
Neat. And what would you do differently if you were given another chance?
If I were given another chance to do this leap all over again, I, quite frankly, would have prepared more financially. I would have had kind of more socked away. I didn't. And I, you know, I fully admit that in the book, even though I was a personal finance show host, I did not have the safety net that I wish I would have had. Mm-hmm. Things went fine and we were never in trouble, but I wish I would have had more of the peace of mind. So I didn't just worry about it all the time. Finances are really important.
And that is definitely coming from somebody who's done Marketplace for 11 years.
Exactly. I should have known better.
Hey, you know, we all learn, right? And that's one piece of advice that you can give other people.
Learn by doing.
Perfect.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tess. It was just such a pleasure. And I really enjoyed talking to you.
I absolutely loved it. Great questions. And, you know, I would just say again to people out there, if you are not experiencing some measure of joy in what you do for 8, 10, 12 hours a day, go. It's
absolutely
not worth
wonderful.
It.
And where can people reach you, Tess?
I have a website, tessviglin.com, and I'm all over social media. I love Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
Wonderful.
So come and
thank
say
you
hi.
So much, Tess. Absolutely. Thank you. So that was the amazing Tess Vigeland. Be sure to link up with her on social media. All of her links are on our show notes at www.womenpreneursuccess.com. So womenpreneursuccess.com. You can link up with me on Facebook at Smita Singh and Womenpreneur Success. Don't forget to go on our website, www.womenpreneursuccess, and get our free Womenpreneur Success 7-Day Jumpstart Kit. It'll really help you if you're stuck or just starting out. And once again, thank you so much for subscribing to the podcast. And thank you so much for letting me hang out in your earbuds. Until next time.
This concludes another episode of Womenpreneur Strategies for Success. Be sure to visit us at womenpreneursuccess.com so you don't miss any of our tips from some of the industry's leading entrepreneurs, investors, and business owners. Remember, you've got the will. Let us help you find the way. Until next time.